And welcome to GFW Radio. This is Jeff Green, the editor-in-chief of something. Oh, yeah, the online part, the PC part of the online site. That's right. That's what I'm editor-in-chief of. And I've got a few other people with me here today. Who are?
Ryan Scott.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Jeff. Hi.
So, hello, yeah.
Papa Jeff.
So, yeah, here we are. We're podcasting. We're still here.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
Anyway,
well, for those,
we'll see y'all next week.
Oh, should I explain? Those who have not heard,
yeah.
For those that's in the know, I just copped double copies of Moog Indigo.
Keep it going.
That's a quote. All right. Oh. So break it down. I'm sorry.
All right. Yeah, we'll break it down. We're podcasting here on April 8th. The news went out a couple hours ago now at this point that GFW, the magazine, shutting down. It's over. We're gone. Goodbye. The issue that was put out on the newsstands, April May issue with the Sims 3 on the cover, has in fact turned out to be our last issue, a bit unbeknownst to us. All those awesome articles that we've already written and we're working on, too fucking bad.
Well,
no. Actually, they're going to show up online.
The crazy thing is, we're about to ship our next issue.
Actually, we were in production for the,
and it's like that issue's not going anywhere. Well, it's going to go online now. This
right,
is the thing. I mean, not in this. We're not going to just put a digital version of it like a Xenio thing, but we're going to retake all the stories we
yes.
had, and you know, find new homes for them on the section on the PC section of OneUp.com. That
we will do digital magic on them.
Yeah, it's our new task to
yep.
to make.
I can tell you, because it doesn't really matter anymore, that the cover story was on StarCraft 2, because James Melke and I had gone down there a few weeks ago to play it all day long.
Again.
I blogged about this recently, again, for a second time. And he and I had some great great experiences against each other and the AI. And so we're going to write it up for your edutainment pleasure on the website now.
You know what? I think you should post the cover on your blog.
Should I? The final cover?
That was a nice cover.
The collector's item?
Yeah.
Well, we hadn't really written the cover lines yet. It's all generic stuff.
People can take a peek in and see like what it looks like before it's...
Right.
I wish.
They could actually see our placeholder cover lines, which are like, you know, another crappy game preview inside. Things like that, you know.
If we had known in advance...
This game will never ship. Yeah, sorry.
The final green speak could have just said whelp. Like just whelp. Centered in the middle of the blank page.
Yeah. I didn't get to do a final one of those. Kind of sucks. We didn't really get to do a goodbye at all.
Nah.
And it would be weird to do it here now on the podcast since we're still here.
Right. That is
right.
Extremely
so that would sort of goodbye. Be irrelevant and inappropriate.
This. It's a print goodbye.
It's a print goodbye.
A kind.
And if we sound a little flip or whatever, you just have to understand and bear with us that we're having a little bit of gallows humor.
Right.
Because, in fact, it's a pretty fucking bad day for us here. So
There's multiple factors. There's the survivor's guilt that Rosemary and Michael Jennings are, you know, they've been laid off today. And
right.
And we have
art staff.
And,
yeah.
You know, we're close friends with them. We've worked with them for years. And, I mean, just this group effort to put out the magazine. And it's like it's just in the past few months. I feel that, like, it's over the past few years. I mean, we've been sort of shaping the magazine, you know, taking it in a certain direction. And there's always this lag, I think, with public perception. And part of it is you just have to toot your own horn in order for people to respect something. You know, like I was telling Sean, like, you could have a really righteous person, you know, I'm not being ironic. You have, you know, a very, you know, righteous person who does nothing, draws no attention to his or herself, and no one will say anything about it. But then you can get someone who's like a televangelist or something and is constantly drawing attention to what it is that, however, you know, he or she is living. And then people are much more likely to come to regard that person as this paragon of righteousness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so here, I mean, it could be anything. I mean, not righteousness. I just use it, pick a random example. But for us, it was like, just keep doing what we're doing. Have the conviction. Say we're going to do these stories, and we're going to, you know, this is the editorial, you know, that we're going to pursue because we're absolutely, you know, convinced that this is good stuff. And then it's just recently that we're starting to get so much good feedback from, you know, our readers, people in the industry. And it's like every day,
yep,
just talking to different people, it comes up over and over again. Like, oh, God, I mean, in the weirdest places, you know, I mean, and finally just to have, it's like it's paying off, you know, and then now it's like.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, I totally agree with that. I mean, we toiled for a long time to sort of change directions and to respond to what we felt were deficiencies in game magazines, as well as, you know, new things we had to deal with because of the internet, and we felt like we sort of got it, and then, you know, weren't reaping much of it, and then all of a sudden in the last few months there's been sort of this like avalanche of goodwill coming our way, mm-hmm, and now right at this point where we feel like we were really on a roll, and I think you guys probably agree with me that Sims 3 issue was awesome.
I actually think the last three, I think the Demigod one, the Battlefield Heroes one, and the Sims one, like, yeah, every time I've picked up and read one of them,
yeah,
after you know, the necessary amount of time required to recover it from it after the, you know, horrible deadlines,
sure,
we have, because usually we'll finish an issue and the last thing I want to do is look at it when we get our copies.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. Oh, my God. I remember that night. But look, when I do get past that period, all three of those, when I finally did go back to them, I was like, this was an awesome issue.
Yeah.
And three in a row or like,
man,
that.
Yeah, I love that feeling. When we get it back and you look through it and you're like, okay, what if I had received this in the mail and I'm flipping through it? My immediate sense is like, okay, it's like when I get, you know, like my favorite magazines, when I pick, you know, I don't want to compare, mm-hmm, you know, it's like the Atlantic of gaming or something, but when I get a magazine like the Atlantic or something, I flip through it and say, wow, like I anticipate reading all these things, and like I just need to pick the order that I'm going to, you know, approach it in. And it's not quite the same as, you know, when you look at a Maxim or a Stuff or something like that. And a lot of gaming magazines where you pick it up and you're like, I know that if I start looking at it now, by the time I get off of this bus, I will be finished with this in its entirety. I mean, there's something to be said for that, but I mean, I don't know. I was basically pretty proud whenever our baby would come back each month and we'd see like the fruits of our effort.
Come across like we're arrogant or anything.
At this point,
there's professional pride here.
Well, I think you have to allow our professional pride on the day that we were shut down.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, like
anyone who can't,
if we weren't proud of what we were doing, we shouldn't have been doing it. I mean, I think only good things come from, you know, that passion and that conviction that you are doing something that's worth pursuing, instead of we're just doing it because this is how the world works, because there is a press event and the story has to be covered, or this has to be said, or this has to be reviewed because it came out this week. I mean, it's like, I mean, I've found reasons for myself, you know, as an editor, for all this stuff in the front of the book, for, you know, the features and stories and stuff. So like, how am I going to keep myself from burning out and from feeling like just a tool? And so, yeah, I mean, that's part of what I'm bummed out about.
Right. I mean, I agree with you there. I mean, I've been doing this for 10 years. It's 10 years of CGW. And certainly after that amount of time, you know, my tolerance for a lot of bullshit, I mean, even, you know, bullshit that the mag might have done in the past had just so passed. You know, there's just certain things I just didn't want to do anymore. There were certain kind of articles I didn't want to write or read about anymore. I just felt like, you know, we complain about this shit all the time, so let's do something about it in print. And I felt like we really had.
Sean, sorry.
No, I wasn't going to say.
It's interesting to see that. I mean, there's, you know, various threads on the internet, and it's awesome to get all the support from the people that did read our magazine, and that's fantastic. But then in the same threads, there's a number of other things that I think we all have some reaction to. And one of them, before we get to the podcast itself, is just that there's a lot of misconception as to what the mag even was, and it was really frustrating. It's really frustrating, for example, to read a post that's like, well, this is just how it is. We can get all this news online, and it's like they just can't keep up. And it's like, well, you didn't read the magazine then, because we were not about saying, hey, you know, this is the preview that, you know, you're going to read here first. I mean, there would be some of that with cover stories and stuff. I mean, and that was like as much a business decision as anything. But all the other stuff in the book, and then even the way, the approach that we took to reviews, the columns, you know, the stuff, the work that, you know, all of our freelancers do. I mean, it was not the magazine that existed that ended today is not what they're representing in their post. But then it was great to see all the people that clearly do read it and were subscribers, just vindicating all the decisions we made, you know. mm-hmm. as much as the fact that we're closed down kind of says that we did the wrong things. I don't know. And then there's let's go to the podcast thing. The other, it's like you see the majority of it's like, oh, that's a bummer, but great, the podcast is still around. And it's like, that is a good thing. And the same reason we're absolutely thankful
yeah.
to have our jobs. And not only that, to have a position to all the stuff that I'm talking about, it's like far from over. And on the positive side, it's going to be available immediately online. You don't have to be a subscriber. You could hear us talk about something on the podcast, and then it's like, boom, that very day, you know, we could put up a story. We can react to things.
Right. I mean, again, in the horn tooting department, and you just got to forgive us for this 1 week for us doing this. But, you know, imagine, you know, the place you worked at, you know, or the thing you worked on had shut down. So we're just indulging today. But, you know, the fact that they closed down the magazine, but, you know, they kept the four of us, and they've put the four of us in pretty key positions online, and the four of us are going to work together still as a team, you know, is pretty cool. You know, relatively. I mean,
it's very cool. Yeah, it's
very cool. And we know that the kind of changes that we started making to the magazine are the things that we're going to be pursuing on OneUp.com as well. So,
and hopefully we can, you know, convince our listeners to read those as well. I mean, that was part of the frustration when I bring up the podcast is still around. Is the thing is that we come in with no preparation whatsoever and extemporize for an hour each week, and that gets more.
You know, about lost
feedback. Yeah, about comics and stuff than you know, an entire month's worth of work that's not just our work, but, you know, all of our wonderful freelancers, our artists, you know, illustrators that work with us, and like all, I mean, just when you look at all that labor that's invisible to our listeners, it's like a magazine just comes out, and if you read it in, you know, a few hours, it's like a, you know, like a comic book or a movie or something. People might have spent like 3 years working on something that you can consume in, you know, 20 minutes.
Yep. Yeah.
And then and it's just like, yeah, the podcast is pretty easy to make. If that paid the bills, then...
Yeah. Well, it's what I, you know, I think that about the game industry itself, you know, that you know, some AAA game or whatever, you know, will take them years and years to work, and you're talking about hundreds of man hours of all these different artists, you know, programmers, 3D graphics, and then all the support staff and all that to get this game out. All that effort, and then, you know, we look at it, and, you know, in 200 words, we're like, what a piece of shit.
Exactly.
You know? Just dismissing. And then, you know, and then they can go ahead and make a casual game, just sort of like we can casually do the podcast and get kudos for that. I mean, right. You know, you got to wonder if some of these game companies are just like, fuck it with these AAA games. Let's make the next Bejeweled. Jesus.
Nice. Yeah. So, I mean, going forward, this is the trick, is like, we have this chance now because we have this section on the website to keep, because part of the good thing, you know, that we're talking about is with the magazine, we're able to really develop a voice and to maintain, you know, a standard across all the pages in that book. And we can perhaps do something of the same sort, because
hopefully we
not
can.
To knock OneUp, but because OneUp's a very big site and there are that many more voices, and there's no single overriding, you know, or there's no core group of people that are saying this is exactly what things are going to be like. So we might be able to do that, but the thing is we got to get people to click on that thing, because right now a lot of people go to the front page of the site, but they don't go to the PC thing, and we want you know, we're gonna need to give reasons for you guys, and over the next coming weeks you'll start seeing them, you know, give you reasons.
But
to,
you're right, we with the magazine PC side, you know, we had this like controlled 100 pages that was ours to shape and mold, and we could lose anything that didn't fit our tone or fit our ideals. And on OneUp, I mean, with all due respect to all the people who work on that website, there isn't that kind of unified voice, you know, at this point, you know, so how we adapt, you know, the GFW feel, whatever,
right,
to that site is something that's still kind of,
we can have a good mix,
remain to be seen.
I mean, the spontaneity that we have with the podcast, I mean, there's this one side of us, and then, but something I don't want to lose about the magazine is that, like, when you look now, I mean, there's just this natural trends, so, you know, things go online, and but where you get the immediacy and the, you know, all the knee-jerk reactions and just the spontaneity online, I mean, you risk absolutely missing the more measured and studied looks at topics. You know, when people say, let's research this, let's talk to it, let's gather, you know, information from multiple sources and put together a proper story, that it's kind of like the way that Atlantic survives now in New Yorker, you know, it's like, instead of saying, you know, we're not going to try to keep up with the blogs and stuff, we're going to come at it with, you know, with this angle. And I think that there's still a place for those stories online. and I still want to see those there alongside the quick things that are like responding like to minute by minute developments in the game.
I think
industry.
It is going to be a challenge for us though to, you know, get people to want to, because I just know my own personal feeling, like I have a hard time reading like super long stories on the web.
Exactly. You know,
So how do we deal with that? I think it's going to be one of our challenges.
Well, right. I mean, you were talking about the challenge of us within 1UP, but then, you know, we're also within the internet itself. Like, our stories to a lot of eyeballs will exist as one-off entities. So, you know, trying to set those in the context of the internet is its own challenge.
Huge. Yeah, it's like listening to, you know, when, say, if you're a musician and you put together an album and it's very much like composed as an album, you know, as a collection of songs that like resonate with one another. And then the single goes on the radio, or maybe there's two singles and it's like, it's still cool. I'm glad you're listening to the single, but you know, when you look at it all in the context, you, not that it's like, you know, an average issue of GFW is always a symphony or something like that, but there is like, you do see that it's the work of like-minded people with, you know, an editor, you know, editorial oversight that's keeping it, you know, together.
Yeah.
The other thing is, like you're saying, like reading long things on the internet. This is what's always been weird to me, is like a lot of current magazines take the maximum approach, and that's, let's put a bunch of, you know, let's assume that the world has lost its attention span, and let's put a bunch of these little things that you read, and no single entry takes more than a minute to read, and you just hop back and forth through them. And it's like, meanwhile, online, you see just these reviews that are like, you know, 4 and 5 pages long. And it's always struck me as completely backwards, because I have like a vast attention span when I'm reading, you know, printed material. I mean, I could just sit and read a book for hours and hours and not even get up. And then online, I don't want to sit and do any really heavy, you know.
The online environment even cultivates it, because within one article, you'll have one paragraph with like multiple words linked that's basically inviting you to, like, in the middle of the sentence, go read something else.
Exactly.
Like, that's just how the internet works.
Well, these like 8-page long reviews that you see on certain websites, you know, for gaming, I mean, to me, that's just a matter of that we don't have a word count. Just say what the hell you want, which of course then to me is also saying we don't either we're not good editors, or, you know, we're you know, I don't know. I think there's a lot to be said for more succinct text. I would rather read, I'm talking about reviews in particular. You know, I would rather read a succinct, to the point, but you know, intelligent,
thought-provoking
short review than an 8-page long. So the graphics. You know.
And there's a difference. Like, short isn't always is better either. It's like if you're using if you're using that same amount of space to just say the same thing, the controls are tight, the graphics, you know, all this other stuff.
Right.
Make sure you use the word compelling, the word gritty. It's really no different if it's long or short, you know. But
that's
true. I mean, the whole thing is let your content determine the length. I mean, what do you need to say, and is everything you're saying worth being said, or are you just babbling?
Well, I just think that the downside of the web is that that ability to babble is too easy. It's too there. You know, if you don't have an assigned word count, because you don't need one, because there's no paper limitation, that it can just lead to that kind of sloppy, lazy writing where I'm just going to say every damn thing I have to say without processing it first.
Right. And then there's the other part of that challenge is knowing where, you know, if it's going to end up on the internet, there's this chew through immediacy that part of you is like, well, it'll be buried in a day anyway. So, like, I'm not going to put as much effort into this article as I would in this tome that will exist forever.
It's funny. I honestly worry about that with my own writing going forward. And I wonder how you guys feel about this too, that I definitely like sweat, you know, bullets over the GFW stuff. You know, I'm late because I'm like crafting the sentences because I feel like it's going to be in print and it's going to live, and I want to be able to look at it 5 years from now and not be embarrassed at what I wrote.
But the thing is, is easier for people to look at your archive material online than it is to go through their
Tupperware. But online, but when I'm like writing a blog, even when I wrote that Spore write-up, which was not a blog, it was actually like a news article or whatever, I felt like I don't have to try as hard because it's just online. So I'm just going to sort of write up the top of my head.
Though.
Well,
mean,
yeah,
like,
and you have to spit it out.
That was due the very next morning.
Right.
Whereas mine, which appeared in the magazine, I had like the rest of the week to work on it. I mean, it's not like I spent an entire week working on it, but I was able to think about it.
Sure.
That's an important part, I think, allowing you to, you know, like I just did this, you know, preview of Ninja Gaiden. And it was like, if I had gone to an event the night before and I had to get it in that night so that it would, the moment the embargo had lifted the next morning, it would have been different because I played the game, I played the preview, and then I thought about it for a couple days. I was like, what is it, like, what is it in this game I'm noticing? And then, like, that governed what I wrote. You know, finding some themes in there and stuff. And I mean, that's the thing. It's when you're basically, your deadlines are being dictated by companies that want the press, that just want the free advertising. I mean, that's another story, and that's something that we're going to have to find ways to I mean, basically, this is what this podcast is turning out. It's like us sort of thinking out loud about people,
print editors,
yeah, you know, facing a transition. And we've had
Those clicks, Sean. We got to get the clicks.
Yeah.
Just, you know. Need those page views, Sean.
And that's another thing for, like, I mean, our audience, I mean, if you do, if you're listening, you're like, this is cool. I agree with this. I don't want to read. I want to read more than just, you know, lists every single day of the week. You know, I mean, you have to click these stories and you have to at least support them. Otherwise, what happens is online, I mean, you get to this point where you're like, we have to, I mean, it happens in print too, but it's more accelerated online where you're like, what did well? People are like, well, we need to, if we're going to get ads, we have to have page views. Mm-hmm. And what's been generating page views so far? Well, let's just do that again. How do we add a new wrinkle to what's been successful? And whereas, like, my whole approach, I maintain my sanity and do this as a career because I say, I find something that's interesting to me, or a freelancer, you know, pitches something and I'm like, I'm totally behind this. I want to go ahead with this because I think that I can convince other people that this is worth examining, you know, rather than like trying to play the stock market with stories and just assign people things that none of us care in the least bit about, but simply because we think it's going to get clicks. And then in
you got to get 20,000 more clicks today, Sean. Right. What do you got for me?
And the people
what do you got
might
for
not
me?
Even be reading it. It might just be like, you know, mentioned
top five best villains.
Dig. Yes.
What do you got for me?
You keep going. This is like the perfect background for it.
I'm sorry.
So they're like, you know, you see something on Dig and you're like, oh, I can check that out. And then you just look and see the list and then you close it. And then those lists can be fun. You know, they can be well done. So I don't want to, like, you know, and I'm sure we'll continue to do some, but it's like, I want to balance and I want to offer a variety of things. And it's like, if it gets to the point where that's all that we're told to do.
Right. And that is the challenge because on the internet, you can get that immediate feedback. Like, if you do know this article did well, you can capitalize it within the next day.
Right.
Whereas print, like, we don't know an issue tanked for months and months and months after
the fact. We don't know what specifically sell well or what caused it to tank.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like per hour, per page.
Mm-hmm. It's insane the way they drilled
to chase
down.
Those.
Yeah, I mean, all four of us were in that meeting. You know, all of us here in the podcast sat in a meeting where we were given a lesson in this program that allows people here at 1UP, and I guess every website, to like drill down into the exact numbers of what, you know, what pages people were looking at in all sorts of different
metrics.
Where they came from, what they looked at between 11 and 12, or how many times they went to the article, whatever. And it was crazy to me, not just the ability to do it, but how important that message seemed to be. I mean, it was so scary. I mean, I think it's exactly what you're saying, Sean, that like if a website starts taking that stuff so seriously, it's just like, well, yesterday the top five fattest game characters got 10 times more clicks than every other story. So today do top thinnest characters. You know, it's just going to be, you know, a validation of doing like puff pieces.
Again, you know, parallels in all their media, just like musics, when you have like artificially constructed boy bands and things like this, and down to pop songs that are like almost generated by a machine to you know, sound close enough to other ones and to, like, you know, hit all these various things that someone that perhaps studies the cognition of, you know, like musical perception to create these harmonies.
Oh, so what I was going to say was, like, they brought up the, maybe not in this meeting, but in another one, we started putting the Tom versus Bruce articles online, very popular column in the print magazine, and we're putting the old ones up there now. We started with not the very first one, but near the first one. And so there have been about three online now.
Four,
okay. And I was in a meeting where somebody was saying, like, you know, they're just not getting that many clicks. You know, people just aren't looking at those. The next question then being, well, should we keep doing it?
Yeah.
You know, they were immediately saying, well, maybe we just shouldn't have put these up there.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it was almost like an appallingly reactionary move.
Yeah. For many reasons. I mean, I think it's a worthwhile question. I'm thinking of this based on the age. I mean, the timeliness of them.
Well, yeah,
are they
there
really
is
timeless
that.
In this net? But the other thing is that, back to what I was saying, there's always this, I think there's just this lag for good things to catch on, you know?
Yep.
I mean, very rarely is something like a universal hit the moment that it's introduced or that something comes out. I mean, you have to just have faith in it and keep going and just say, you know, I'm convinced that this is worthwhile and we'll just keep doing it, you know? And I mean, just like say if someone listened to GFW radio or something and they're like, eh, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then at one point someone's like, you know what? I like this. I like listening to it. But then it's not like the episode before that, there was some radical change in it or something that it just got better. I mean, even though, you know, things are changing like that. But if you just cut it, if you're like, eh, this is stupid.
Maybe it was just the week that Ryan like went off on some like epic Lost rant. So that's why they like it now.
Yeah, it might for Tom versus Bruce, it might just be like the game that they know is what they're talking about. Because those columns are very specific.
Right.
Like they talk a great deal about mechanics and make, you know,
right.
riff and make jokes based on the mechanics of the game, which if you don't understand, sometimes completely blows
right.
you by.
And
genre that you're into.
Exactly. So it's going to be dependent week for week. I mean, one article may get some big, huge spike in the number of clicks because it happened to be whatever, StarCraft 1 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It just, what was scaring me was like the availability of those metrics, that they're so close, and the ability to react to them so fast. Like mm-hmm. it was just easy to just say, let's just do this.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not working, rather than take the time.
This was on a different scale with like just cover stories for the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, where it's like only, you know, World of Warcraft covers would really have excellent returns.
Right, so get new stand click-through.
God, I got to say, man.
Do more of those. And, like, I believe that every time we did one, we really delivered on it. We made it worthwhile.
Yep, we did.
Awesome. But then the other side is this weird perception that the magazine, that all we were doing was basically World of Warcraft Monthly, which is hilarious because, of course, if you subscribe and really read it, you know that...
Right.
Aside from like what we did, two covers
in the GFW, right?
And it might come up here and there. There might be a column in the back, but it's like that's it. You know, it's really it wasn't World of Warcraft Monthly in the least bit. I guess I'm just taking a tangent on perception again. Mm-hmm.
It does. I do have to say it is a great relief. Nothing else feels like a relief to me in what happened today. It feels like a big fucking bad bummer, mm-hmm. but to not have these arguments about what goes on our cover anymore. I don't mean amongst ourselves. I mean with the people above us.
Right.
To not have to go through that bullshit anymore, thank fucking God.
There were many things that we wanted for our covers that because what's going to sell, and like there was no conviction that it wasn't going to sell. I mean, there was, you know, people weren't convinced it was going to sell, so.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wish there was like a two or three day period.
Worried.
Right. Would have been nice if there was a few day period where it actually wasn't out yet that we were closing, and we could have just said yes to every lame ass cover offer we get in the mail all the time. Would have been great to just write back and go, yeah, okay, July, it's yours. You're on.
Just to fool everyone.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That's mean, Jeff.
Yeah, it's kind of mean.
It's flat out batitude.
Got to take it out on someone today. Take it out
the entire game industry is who decided to take it out on.
Ryan, what do you have to say about all this today? How you feeling?
All right.
This got to be tough for you because this is like, because I've been through magazine closing. I had completely different jobs. So, but for you, this was like your first real job, right?
I mean, my first job, not retail.
Mm-hmm. Right. So the very first job you had that was not retail, you fucked it up. How does that feel?
Dang. You know what? Every place I have ever worked, like my reason for leaving or my, you know, or moving on, whatever, is closed.
Huh. You could have told me that before I hired you.
I've killed every place I've worked at.
Yeah. Strange that didn't come up in your interview.
So you can just go ahead and blame me for all this.
It's Sean and I have both... this was like the, you know, I was saying, this was like the first time I got to be one of the survivors that was feeling guilty rather than one of the people heading out the door.
Mm-hmm.
I can't talk too much about it, but we were involved in a project called GameStar.
Why can't you talk about it?
What do you, is it like still? Know, I mean,
there's not much to talk about.
It just was ridiculous, and the way it ended was like sad, and it was.
How many issues did you guys put out?
Super surreal.
3, 4? I can't remember.
And then was it like a one day you got the boot sort of thing?
Well, it was like
it kind of had a similar track. It like was, you know, 12 issues, and then it went down to 8 per year, which was, you know. Sounds pretty similar.
But you were on, like, issue 2 when this happened, right?
Right, it was 3.
Issue 3, bitch.
We were working on 4, and we were working on the 4th one, so I don't think that one ever came.
So when they slash you from 12 to 8 issues a year before you're done working on your 4th issue, that's probably a bad sign.
I actually, the confession is, like, you know, when I got that job, I never, like, really moved in to my cube. You know, I never brought anything.
Just because you knew?
Just because I knew. Sense. I knew that what was coming. I was like, I'm just going to have to pack up anything I bring in here. So, you know, and then the
That's
morning,
a big vote of
they
confidence.
Were like, you know, they called into HR and they're like, magazine's closing. You got to leave. And I was like, all right, I just grabbed my bag, turned my computer off.
See you later.
Peace. But that was part of the other thing, too, where just desperately trying to figure out how to make a magazine, enthusiast gaming magazine, work. And part of the solution there was to put titty on it and on everything.
Maybe that was our problem here with GFW.
It wasn't because it
not did. Enough titty.
Well, the titty, it was basically, it looked like, I mean, I'm sure some of the, whatever, some of the 10 subscribers were suspicious that maybe we were convincing our sisters to, like, wear their swimsuits and appear in our magazine or something, because it was just, like, random ass. I mean, not that I don't have, like, you know, not to knock, you know, like, random girls, but just, it was, if you're trying to sell, like, this magazine based on sex.
So they were, like, fourth-rate models.
Yeah, well, they weren't even really models. Yeah. It was, like,
the kind who, like, pose with, like, boxes of software.
Barbizon kind of dropouts.
Uh-huh. What do you always call them? Like, the random girls from Daly City?
Daly City girls. Daly City's a suburb of San Francisco. And the model choice kind of had some Daly City to it.
Well, we had our vampire cover back in CGW's days.
Legendary.
The legendary vampire cover. So we had hired this model to come in. We were doing a story on Activision's Vampire the Masquerade game. And that was at a time when, you know, one of the many times when the magazine industry was, you know, going through, like, what do we, you know, what's going to sell? Kind of shit. And, you know, we had like 3D renders of anonymous vampires from this game, mm-hmm. which just looked like, you know, butt. So we didn't want to put those on the cover. And so this was like in the heyday of Maxim and things like that, when those things were really taken off. And so I'm not going to name names of my former editors, but they had this brilliant idea of, like, you know, let's do a Maxim style cover. Let's get some hot chick, dress her up like a vampire, and, you know, put the words "bite me." That was actually the cover line on the cover. So that's what we did. So this poor woman came over from some modeling agency. They dressed her up in this horribly fucking ugly vampire makeup. And little known anecdote, factoid of that day, she had deathly bad stomach flu. So
that's why she was pale.
So in the middle of the this day long photo shoot, they would take breaks so she could vomit. So which was nice foreshadowing.
That's
of how that issue
too.
Ended up.
And it also has the whole vibe of, like, you know, like the loser at a party trying to, like, hit on the girl who's, like, puking, you know.
Right. So you know, so we put this cover out, and it was just so bad. I mean, not only was the cover bad, but even if you looked at all the photos that came back, like, they picked a particularly bad one. Mm-hmm.
Dude, that shit was better than some of the stuff in our magazine.
Really? Have you seen the Bite Me cover?
I've seen it. Have you seen the GameStar tutorials?
The great thing was like how betrayed and angry, like, Activision was too. Like, they were like, because this was computer gaming world, you know, we had this, like, storied, venerable sort of, you know, grandfather dean of gaming journalism,
right?
Reputation.
The vampire series is, like, really, like,
you had a bottom
fake
to race
regal
to.
And rice goth and not, like,
yes.
You know, vampire porn. foreign at all.
Right. And then we made the cheesiest, most lowbrow, pandering piece of shit Maxim style cover. And they were just like, what the fuck? Like, we gave you all this game art and this is what you did? They were so mad at
that
us.
That was all the rage forever. It was like, you know, so many different magazines. That one got Stevie Case to pose.
Oh, yeah.
As like a naughty teacher.
Right.
And there was like,
was that a PC Accelerator, I think, maybe.
There was that, yeah. And then there was the one that Darren worked on. What was that? Insight.
Insight. Oh, that was a great
thing. That's what was so bizarre about GameStar US. I was like, really?
Yeah.
Like, didn't all this shit like fail like fucking 5 years ago?
Right. That was the idea that you could do like a mainstream game magazine by putting girls and cars and in it or whatever.
Hey, you remember that article that we did with a former CGW editor who posed with a bunch of gaming peripherals and stuff with a bunch of models?
Yeah. What was the theme of that?
Was before my day, man.
Oh my god, that article's.
I was in the building. I was at EGM at the time.
He was like going to build like the ultimate
game room.
Gaming room. Is that what it was?
Yeah. And he had like this huge desk and all these joysticks and like monitors and stuff.
All this fancy shit. And then like a bunch of models.
For him to pose with models and get a bunch of swag from the companies.
Uh huh.
I just remember him pitching that
for
several issues until somebody finally agreed to do it. And it was sort of like the whole time, like, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Can you tell me who it was?
Well, we'll tell you offline.
Okay. I want to know.
So yeah, whatever. Are we gonna mine Waja moments in CGW and GFW history?
Oh man,
there's a lot of them.
Most of them we can't talk about, though. I mean, but there's
most of them involve our former.
We talked about the classic when we read that review that preview that was never printed.
Oh boy,
about the Ascending Mountain.
Oh right, we got a number of those. There's a
files.
There's a little folder of like unbelievably. Laugh out loud, hilariously bad articles we never printed.
You told
the
story
kind of stuff you find when you die.
Yeah. What?
Like, oh, you told the story of Michael Jordan on the cover on the podcast. I think you might have.
Oh, was that the month?
I'm hoping we have it because I want to hear it again.
I believe it was the Ken Levine special. GC.
Oh, did I? Yes. Good.
When it
good
was supposed
memory.
To be Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
Supposed to be Baldur's Gate 2. Yeah.
It's a good tale.
I remember running into Ray and Greg. I don't know if I told this part of the story, but Ray and Greg. At BioWare, you know, at that time, you have to remember BioWare was still, even though Baldur's Gate 1 was a huge hit, they were not the BioWare that they are today. They were not AAA. They had one great RPG under their belt. But at that point, that was it, really. So, you know, the decision to put Baldur's Gate 2 on the cover wasn't quite as cut and dried as it would with, say, anything they made right now. Mm-hmm. At the time, you know, there was still a little bit of a chosen entity, but to
the only people buying the magazine back then as much as today, though, were people
who were
PC gamers. It wasn't like some dude who's like just wanders drunk, half drunk out of the sports bar, and he's like, holy shit, Computer Gaming World, it's got Michael Jordan on it.
Well, certainly a Baldur's Gate 2 cover, yes, would have been more successful than a Michael Jordan cover. And it wasn't even like a Michael Jordan game. It was like some random, image of Michael Jordan that they got somewhere and photoshopped in
on Corbis or something.
Yeah.
And then the only content there was like a 15 word micro preview of an
NBA live game.
Game.
Yeah. Right. That was
somewhere
how we justified.
Buried somewhere in the book.
Right. But I remember running into Ray and Greg in a bar and they were so bitter, you know, I mean, at that very moment, because I told them that they couldn't over the phone or whatever email that they couldn't, they weren't. And actually, I wasn't editor in chief, but whoever was editor in chief said, you know, you're not going to get the full cover. Because of this, you know, Ziff Davis is concerned about what's going to sell. You know, we have to appeal to the widest possible audience. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I ran into them at a bar and they were like, we didn't get the full cover because of that? Because of fucking Michael Jordan? What the fuck?
Yeah, it was great.
Did they ever forgive you?
Sure, they forgave
I would have thrown my beard on your face.
Yeah.
Should have put Michael Jordan on the Dragon Age cover just for good measure.
Oh, that would have been great. Oh, God. And now we don't have a magazine to do that anymore. What a great joke that would have been.
That would have been awesome.
So that story, that Baldur's Gate 2 story, was actually my I flew up to Edmonton to...
a picture of Jordan popping up in the corner. What's gonna sell?
Oh god, It would have been the greatest in joke. Yeah. Would have got Ray and Greg mad awesome. All over again.
Like, most inside joke in human history on GFW number one.
I'm thinking of, like, you get ahead in the magazine. Because, like, you know in Peggle, when the guys pop up after you get, like, a big combo?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Like that.
Have Michael Jordan pop up.
Yeah,
like, maybe they could build that into Dragon Age. Like when you level up, you get Michael Jordan popping up. Good job, yo. You got 5 points to spend now. That story that I for that issue of Baldur's Gate 2, that was probably my low as a game journalist. Like not being responsible and just doing the dumb thing. I was a little bit younger. They flew me up to Edmonton to see Baldur's Gate 2. I'd never been to Canada before. The BioWare guys, you know, all wanted to take me out drinking that first night. I don't know if you've had Canadian beer, much higher alcohol content than our weak-ass American beer. I did not have any dinner. So I sat with these guys. I had 6 pints of beer, and I'm a lightweight already. I'm done after 2 normally. I had 6 pints of this stuff. I was so fucking drunk that, I mean, they were basically like carrying me back to my hotel room in Edmonton. I did not know where I was really. I mean, I'm not saying this like I'm bragging. I'm not a drinker. This was not something I'm saying with any pride. I'm just telling it because when I look back on it, it was so ridiculous. So they brought me to my hotel room. The last thing I remember that night was I was like looking at the bed, and then I just like face planted on it, like fully dressed. I was like,
you were mumbling,
yeah, blah, blah. And then and then I blacked out. And then the next thing I knew was that I knew I was horizontal, and I knew that my face was really cold, and it felt like I was laying on something hard. And I opened my eyes and I saw wood paneling. And then I lifted my head up, and I was laying down. I had passed out in the bathroom because I guess I had wandered in there like to throw up or something. And so what I was seeing was like the cabinet of the sink. So that was at some time in the middle of the night. Then the next thing I knew, it was morning, and they're waking me up to go do this cover story. And this is the first time I'd met these guys.
This is pathetic.
And this was early on in my game journalist career too. So, you know, imagine, you know, you get to do a cover story. It's a sequel to this RPG. I flew to another country to go do it.
You were the first.
I was first to see it. We got the first screen.
I wish I could have seen and your article.
Did a story. Oh, it was. I'm the first person to see Baldur's Gate 2. Me. So that next morning, completely just in horrible bad shape, you know, just really terrible shape. I had to go to BioWare to meet with these guys. I'm sitting down with Greg, the president of the company, and Ray, and they're talking to me about Baldur's Gate 2. This was pre, like, I didn't have a voice recorder, you know. I just, like, had my notepad. And the entire time that they're talking to me about their brand new game, all that is going through my head is, please don't throw up. Please don't throw up. Please don't throw up. Please don't throw up.
I thought you were going to be like, could Michael Jordan hit a 3-pointer for beer?
No, I couldn't even hear about what they were talking about. I was just like, oh, man, I don't know what. I'm going to have to get, like, press releases on this game because I can't hear a word he's saying.
Man, I'm going to have to go back and read that cover story.
Yeah, you should go back and read it because
how could you even play that game? I would have such horrible associations with Baldur's Gate 2 for the rest of my life. Based on these stories you're telling me, I couldn't load it up without just, like, shuddering.
Baldur's Gate's a portal to enhanced filth. So what about Ryan and Sean? What's your lowest moment in your career?
Oh, God.
Lowest moment. Oh,
Ryan, I don't know if your career has been long enough to have a low moment.
Ryan, you just tend to avoid wash-off scenarios pretty well.
I do what I can, yeah.
That's why.
You do. But you did actually.
You're kind of bullshit-free.
But you did cop to, like, hanging action figures in their package on your walls.
What the hell does that have to do with my career? That's just normal.
Right.
It's just everyday stuff.
Huh. I don't know. I'm drawing a blank here. I could have had prep time. If you can remember something
mine,
I told you.
I told mine on one of yours. I don't know if it's the lowest, but when I went to see the 50 Cent game, I didn't do anything that was unbecoming or that I regret, but we basically, I was told, you know, EGM's got this exclusive on the 50 Cent. He's making a game. And you get to go down and you get to interview 50 Cent. And long story short, I go down there and I'm in this room. And it's nothing but a PR guy to talk to. The room's covered in 50 Cent memorabilia, and he turns on after playing music and taking me to lunch and giving me some vitamin water, like 50 Cent brand, he turns on a video and it's an interview, a pre-recorded interview with internal PR and 50 Cent, and then to the point that it was unedited so you could hear them coaching him and telling him to start again and begin his sentences and his responses this way. And then when we're done, I was like, so what? Where's my interview? And they're like, oh, well, we're transcribing that video you saw, and then once that passes for approval, then they then had to approve the transcript of their internal video interview.
So your interview was
that,
this,
and give that to me.
Was this pre-done one with his own PR?
Yes.
That was your interview?
And that's what they... So, but I think just that whole scenario was one of those, like, wow.
What the hell?
Good Lord.
And that was for your cover story?
No, it wasn't a cover story. Oh, okay. I got to go back and read it. I know I got plenty. I mean, dude, there was... I basically... Everything I said here, I made clear that, those were the conditions happened. Under which I saw the game.
I can't think of other good moments. I had a good Wajah moment. Actually, it was before I worked at CGW in the old days. I was on Mac Week, another defunct Ziff Davis publication. Thank you very much. It was a weekly Macintosh business magazine. And it was very much more like a news magazine. You know, it was not catered to end users, like just Mac users. It was catered to like business. Every once in a while, I would lobby to do a gaming story because I didn't really give a fuck about the modem beat that I was on. So I would say, like, you know, there are a lot of game companies who are like using Macs to make games or something. Why don't we do an article on that? So I did get through one to do an article on LucasArts, who were big Mac proponents at that time. This is like the early 90s. And so me and a couple other guys from Mac Week went to LucasArts Ranch. And so this was the first time I'm getting to go to the ranch. And, you know, if you're a dork, that's kind of like a big, cool deal. But back in those days at Mac Week, because it was more like a news organization, the policy was when you went to go do an offsite interview, you had to wear a suit. So we all wore our, you know, I wore like a black suit with a white shirt and tie, and the other two guys. And we go to the LucasArts Ranch, and all these dudes are, like, in, like, fucking, like, cut-off shorts and, like, you know, thongs. I mean, like, sandals. I don't mean, like, butt thongs. Maybe they were, but I didn't see them. So we get to the ranch, and we're gonna meet with all these people. And right before we're going to sit down to meet with the LucasArts people, you guys have seen this. I have some kind of, like, horrible, like, fucked up problem with pens where they you know, like, because I chew on them
and then they,
and then they explode
in your face.
So that's what happened.
I had in fourth grade.
Yeah. So what happened was I had been doing that with this black pen, which I then put in the shirt pocket of my white shirt. And then this thing, it didn't just like leak. This thing, it was like, it fucking like internally combusted. So there was just like this my whole white shirt was black. Like it had been like I had been shot in the heart and like bled black.
This is weird. It's not surprising to me at all.
So my whole day at the LucasArts Ranch, I'm this dork. Everyone's just totally casually dressed. I'm in this suit with black ink all over me.
Well, why didn't you just button up your jacket?
Oh, well, that was the other thing. It was like 90 degrees outside. It was too hot.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, right.
I don't have much to go with. That's it. That's not much of a story, but that's all I got.
When we interviewed Will Wright and Lucy Bradshaw, and there's like a video version of it on videos. Yeah. If you're wondering why Jeff is in the background, it's because immediately prior to sitting down with the two at Max's Studios, Jeff was eating a pen yet again, and it was all over his fucking face. So he's like, "I'll sit over here while you interview him, Sean."
Yeah, I guess it had exploded, and the ink was on my fingers, and then I was like putting my hands on my face. And yeah, Sean and I sit down with Lucy Bradshaw and Will Wright, and the two of them weren't even saying anything. They were being so polite. They were just like looking at me, and then Sean goes like, "Dude, you got fucking ink all over your face." So we moved me off camera.
Wow. And again, I'm surprised you can pick up pens and do that after your traumatic LucasArts experience.
I just don't think about it.
You don't
it's
learn.
A problem.
If
don't
we
learn.
Can
t- I do
if
not
we
learn.
Can expand our range to include things that we've seen other people in the industry involved in and doing.
Oh, like
we
the
would
coke
be able
snorting?
To have like another like, couple hours. I mean, just the.
Well, yeah.
Just legendary scenarios that.
Yeah, I remember being at an event at EA years ago with Robert Coffey, and there's a freelancer who was just notorious for doing cocaine.
And
what?
Yeah. And so Robert Coffey and I were at this event. It was like one of those EA Day things. And, you know, Robert Coffey, who I love, is a good friend of mine. He could kick my ass because he knows Krav Maga. But he's kind of short. So, you know, he went to the men's room at this EA event. And he's standing next to the guy, this guy who's notorious for doing cocaine. And because Robert Coffey, you know, is the height he was, he actually had a, you know, clear view up this guy's nostrils when he looked at him. And sure enough, they were, you know, coated white. And so he came out of the bathroom and he was like, hey, go check out. I almost said his name out loud.
Oh, shit.
What I did. So, go check out what's his name's nose. So I did. I went, walked over there and made a pretense because we're about the same height of being able to, you know, look a couple inches under and sure enough. Yeah. And then if you watch him throughout the day as he's like talking to the developers, the whole thing's like, so how many levels do you think this game has? You know, it's like, wow.
He wasn't feeling holy. He was just sniffing and that was it.
Oh yeah. As far as I know. Yeah.
My only Waja moments are like stupid bad PR stories, which I think we've already told.
Well, tell one, Ryan.
The one where you're physically threatened.
Oh, there's that one. Yeah,
oh my God,
that was
fantastic.
That was awesome.
That was epic. Yeah, tell that story.
That was, well, I won't say
the name should be left out.
Yeah, we'll leave the names out.
I won't say the dude's name, but God, this dude. He's a crazy man. But I had written a blog. Can I say what the blog was about?
No, of
well,
course
don't,
you
don't
can.
Say the game name.
Then it'll be easy to figure
leave
out.
Leave everything
I had written a
something,
blog.
Something.
A very critical blog.
Everyone's going through Ryan's old blog calling, post right now.
Calling a particular company out for...
No, just calling them out. That's all you got to say.
Yes, for something.
We're coaching Ryan and
how
not to end up in a lawsuit. Yeah.
And this dude, this PR dude for
it could have been a
company,
woman.
PR dude or woman.
Okay.
Yeah.
He calls Darren's.
Yes.
Voicemail. Not me. Not you.
Right. Not
Darren's.
Me or you. Uh-huh.
And just leaves this. Terrible screed about how, you know, you can't believe I posted all this, and he's gonna like kick my ass if he sees me at GDC the next week, and like he wants to wring my neck and all this stuff. And it's just this really vicious voicemail, which, you know, I listened to it, I thought it was hilarious, but it was so bad that it got forwarded on to our HR department,
right,
by our editorial director at the time. And The dude was forced to apologize.
Right.
And, you know, he was falling all over himself to apologize after that, but...
Right, because it had actually turned into a, you have threatened physical violence against one of our editors and we can sue you.
And is that when, that's when you started bringing that big thing of pepper spray on your backpack, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Just in case.
That was awesome. I need to write more blog posts like that.
I can't remember what you said now that so angered him.
I don't remember what I said. I still feel I was justified in that. So
of course you were.
Luckily, there are lots and lots of angry blog posts directed at different developers.
Oh,
I
made
be able to figure it out.
I made lots of angry blog posts on my blog. So good luck narrowing that
they're
down.
They're all angry.
Rage.
God, I got nothing. I know I've done stupid shit, but I'm drawing a giant blank.
Well, I didn't even know how we got off on this tangent.
You're talking about
some
true confessions thing.
Talking about
so it's
Baldur's
another
Gate
typical
2.
Week on GFW Radio.
Tangents.
Yeah,
that's the thing. What are we gonna name? What's our the name of this podcast gonna be?
Let's put it out there to the listeners. What would you like us to be called? Should we just be the Brodeo?
Names? Yeah.
97.5 the Brodeo.
It's gonna be difficult. We don't want to. I think. A name that's more general, you know, where we could probably bring in listeners that otherwise wouldn't try us because it sounds so specific, like, oh, well, I'm not a PC gamer.
I always thought GFW Radio had a nice ring to it.
After, not at first you didn't. It's like we.
I'm just kidding. I don't at all.
And then, but then
later it builds.
Just for the people that listen to it know what it is now is like making it clear that, okay, yes, the artist formerly known as, well, not the artist, but the dipshits formerly known as GFW Radio.
Right. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to lose people and confuse them.
True. Lose and confuse.
Maybe we just say stay as GFW because that's what people know.
Michael Jordan cast.
People, the Brodeo is popular. Some people already started hating that.
I don't really like the Brodeo. I gotta come out and confess. I don't like the Brodeo.
Really?
Really?
You never really sat with me.
Really?
Yeah.
What did you have? What did you send me the other day? It was something else with the bro prefix.
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Radio.
But Ryan linked me just yesterday, I think, some T-shirt. Was it like a Cafe Press shirt?
There was some site
that said Brodeo.
That has all these T-shirts that say Brodeo on them.
Really? Yeah, it's not related to us, though, which pissed me off.
Yeah. Well, you stole it from something else.
Well, it says Brodeo San Francisco, too, which is even weirder.
Yeah.
We need a Cafe Press shirt for Robert Bobbito, a.k.a. Max Chill, because he, in a thread about this, closure of the magazine, he just posted, it's time for law school. And then the response was, Max Chill, Ace Attorney.
Oh.
I want a shirt of that.
I saw Dr. Maximum Chill, PhD, in Berkeley the other night. I think I told you that.
Was he chilling?
Maximum he was chilling, day. Yeah. My wife and I were eating at this awesome New Orleans restaurant in downtown Berkeley, and it's always really crowded on the weekends. It's impossible to get in. There's just a line. And so he and a bunch of gnarly-looking folks – no, they were nice-looking people. It was probably his wife, I shouldn't say. walked up, good and Lord. They were like – they stood in line for like 2 minutes, and then they're like, nah, because it was too late, which was a really good call because – the people in front of, right in front of them in the line, my wife and I ate our whole meal, had dessert, sat around hogging the table, not getting up as soon as we should have if we were being polite, before like anybody in that line had even moved.
Wow.
Max Joe would not have eaten dinner until like 11 o'clock.
And that's the weekend news.
I got nothing this week.
Yeah. So what
I'm
else?
Emotionally
about,
drained.
Well, use the opportunity while we have it. Anything else about the magazine that you want to say, story you want to tell?
What was the
I got a
what
lot
story
of
were you the proudest of? Which were you most embarrassed of?
What are your top five favorite GFW stories?
I got plenty of ones. It's not, maybe not in GFW, but over my career that I was embarrassed of. And they're probably all online, so
yeah,
probably plenty on 1UP.
Oh, dude, we can't talk about that, can we? The cover, the GameStar cover that never happened.
I don't know.
The Halo one, the why people don't finish games one.
Why can't you tell? This is like ancient history.
That was pretty sad, man. I remember what, okay, so the cover story, the whole thing there was, you know, part of the experimentation was like, you know, we don't have like the subscription, you know, base to convince these publishers to give us the world exclusives on their big name titles. So we're going to, you know, use these theme covers and half naked women to sell. And 1 month And it was a pretty cool idea. It's funny because this was years ago, and I just saw it seems like, you know, 1UP just put a story on the same topic up. It's like why people don't finish the games. But the cover image, I don't know where it originated, but they're like, okay, we're going to get this illustrator. And it was a guy associated with Udon Studios, but it was like an intern or something. It
must have been. I'm not sure.
It wasn't like one of the main, you know, one of the principal artists of this outfit. And the idea was like a Master Chief helmet with like a spider with a cobweb in it and like maybe a skeleton.
Right, it's supposed to be like shattered like a, and there's like a skeleton like, in there and it was rotting or...
Like a riff out, you know, the old movie Def Con, whatever it was.
Mm.
Like some kind of like thing on that. But you look at it and it just looked bossed. It looked jank as hell.
I remember we all walked in the office to look at it on the monitor and we all just were like, oh no.
we were just like waiting for, you know, like, okay, Microsoft's going to go crazy.
He's like, what are you trying to say with this? Hello, Dad.
And like, and that wasn't worrying me, but it's like just the thing looked so dumb. It looked shitty.
Yeah. Well, we had used the outlet before for a cover that turned out really well. So we were just like, oh, okay, let's use them again. And then, like you said, must have been the intern this time.
Yeah. Sometimes those happen with cover images, man. Like, that's always an interesting thing. I don't, like, when EGM did the Saints Row 2 cover, like, I mean, whatever, a cool story. Robert did an excellent job, but the image, it's like, here's tough guy and tough chick. There they are.
Covers are tough. Really are just a nightmare. They really are. I mean,
you have in a lot of ways, you have two interests that
yes,
need to be appeased.
Exactly.
You have the interest of us, which is to sell the thing. And then the interest of the developer and publisher, which is to sell it their game the way they're planning on selling.
Right. And then we also, in our case, we had, you know, the Ziff Davis overlords with their own agenda. So you had us as editors knowing what would please our readers. Mm-hmm. We had the game company wanting to basically, you know, use the cover as a marketing tool. And then we had our publishers who wanted to ensure that it would sell as much as it could on the newsstand, even though they didn't know anything about games, so they didn't really know what would sell.
And this is like reading tea leaves, too. I mean, everyone had some thing. Like, well, it should be covered in text, or it should be, you know, and you have to mention all these things, and that's a proven seller.
I have been in CERC meetings like every year of my life for like the last 7 years, and every year there's like a new color.
Right.
Like, yellow sells. Everything's got to be yellow. The next year it's like, oh, yellow's terrible. Use white and green, and then it's different every time.
Right. In fact, Sean and I, we were in this last CERC meeting, the ill-fated, I guess, last CERC meeting ever for GFW, and that came up, remember? Mm. It came up that white covers sell. And we all out loud, I mean, it was like this like monumentally awesome lack of respect for the CERC guy for like 1 minute, where all the editors and like, you know, the other editors from other publications, I mean, you know, our boss too was there like going, just sort of laughing at that point, like, oh, so it's white now. Yeah. Okay, so it's not purple this year.
Ridiculous. You know,
and the guy was just kind of sitting there like, well, that's what the data point is.
I've always been envious of Edge magazine, you know, published in United Kingdom, because the way that their model works, they have so few subscribers, but the subscription costs so much, and it's about hitting. I mean, and that's a perfect scenario. It's like, you know exactly who you're writing for and who you're creating this for. You don't have to make your money back by selling a bajillion to the dude who comes half drunk out of the sports bar. And so their covers can be like the incredible one they did on Rock Band. It was like an amplifier.
Oh, God, what a great cover.
Stickers on the back, and then that was the game's, you know, each of the stickers would be like, okay, this means that there's some coverage of this game in here as well. It was such a perfect thing.
They were beautiful, like, magazine covers.
There was like no chance in hell that anyone that doesn't operate on that model could get away with doing that, you know.
It was weird what saying, like, totally gave me Brad Wardell flashbacks, because he was talking in terms of, you know, selling games to the people he knows who are going to buy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow, whoa, weird. So that's an aside.
Right. So, like with the kind of games that they make, I mean, that's like another, it's an awesome position to be in, instead of trying to, like, again, like, it goes back to everything, like our stories, you know, and the, you know, the kind of, when the pressure is too strong online to just replicate the last week's success, you know. And you get magazines that made that way, you get games that are made that way, and it's like, that's all. Know what you want to do and do it, and then if you do it well enough, people will like it, and, you know, word will spread.
Yeah. We never had that. We were never given that kind of independence with our covers, and it was always a source of frustration. I mean, even if the other people who were involved had good intentions, which they did, and were good people, which they pretty much are, still, there's something about, like, designing a cover by committee with all these people with these different agendas that's just so fucking soul-sucking,
right?
You know, that we weren't in charge of it, that we couldn't just say, as this group of, you know, ostensibly creative people, that the seven of us making this magazine could just go, let's make a really kick-ass cover and then come up with an idea, which is the impression you get when you read Edge. Edge. Every month that would come in and you go, fuck, what a good cover.
Right.
Whereas we got like all these bullshit different masters we're answering to.
You got to get a number on the cover. Every month you got to get, you know, 55 ways to, you know, get six-pack abs
or whatever it is. Not in our case.
List the number of games that are in here.
57 previews. Oh, and make sure it's an odd number, because people will believe it's more real if it's an odd number. If you say it's 50 games, they'll think you made it up. So what you want to do is you want to say 49, because then they'll think you really got 49.
Sadly, you're quoting someone. That's a
I am.
Quote.
This is what my fucking days were like. That's the part of the job I am not going to miss. Making those covers sucked. And, you know,
we always wonder pragmatic
things.
Well,
we did.
We're like, well, this is on the cover now, but you're like, that's like a 30 word like micro item in the context of some other story. Should we really be going for that bait and switch? And then it's like, who the fuck is this guy talking? And it's like, you kind of just hang your head and walk out, you know?
Yep. Well, we got that, like, every month, whatever you got in there, get World of Warcraft on the cover.
Doesn't matter.
Your aunt is...
all of a sudden, my aunt is working in the Cirque department at Ziff. They're all guys. I'm just... Suddenly, it's a 50-year-old Jewish lady.
Whatever you do, you got to get World of Warcraft on the cover. Just put a 15-word write-up in your news section about some new map, and that's enough to get it on the cover, because World of Warcraft sells. That's what we learned this week. World of Warcraft sells. So, I mean, you could actually look in a bunch of past issues, and you can see there's always a cover line about World of Warcraft.
Do you find great comfort in phones? Because I don't know, you can't see this, but Jeff has the headset.
You're right. You're right.
Oh, God, that's so buffoonish.
I'm fondling phones.
He's like, freeze right now.
All right.
There's a traditional wall phone behind him. He's pulled the receiver from that off.
Okay.
And he's got that in his hand.
We'll put this on the block.
Then in his other hand, he has a cell phone open, but upside down, as though he's going to call.
Why do I take this shit from you?
You're wearing a headset. You don't even know. You said you didn't know where you were in Edmonton, Canada. Do you even know where you're at right now?
I do. I just, you know, when I start babbling, I fidget.
You start doing things.
I need things to.
You need a hand.
You need a pen.
I'm doing it with this cord.
Give him a pen to eat.
Oh, yes. You're right. Wow.
It was just a strange.
Let's pulse that online.
He is dual wielding phones right now.
Yeah. So, what are we talking about? We're talking about covers. And then the other part, I mean, the game companies at times cannot be let off the hook. I mean, you know, because they, you know, obviously they want their game to look in the best possible light. They do. And that's understandable. But what was often hard for so many game companies to understand was that we were not their game box, you know, and this article was not part of their PR plan. And so we might have a specific idea of what we might want to do editorially for the cover, or we might understand what sells on the newsstands, though apparently I guess we don't since we're out of business. but they would have some specific agenda that was based on their own internal marketing that would have nothing to do with anything related to our magazine or what should be on a cover.
They'll determine in advance when they begin their PR programs, like which they'll have art and they'll set it aside and say, this is going to be this magazine's cover.
Yes.
This will be this magazine's cover. And they'll plan it out for the entire year and just say, this is, you know,
and then
exactly
sometimes
how it's
they'll just
happen.
Say, and we don't have any other art for you.
Right.
So we would essentially be, you know, between a rock and a hard place there, because we're dependent on them for the art, but they're not giving any to us because they've given us the one they're going to give us.
Yeah.
MJ would fight the good fight and say, no, this is just not going to work. And we managed to get some otherwise final art that there just is nothing else.
And sometimes they're great to work with. They'll,
of course they are.
They'll say, oh, you need an adjustment here. You need the composition changed. And they'll totally do it.
They'll totally work with it.
I would say that, like, the Sims 3 cover, I mean, the Sims has notoriously been an incredibly difficult franchise for us to get a good cover for. And it's not their fault. It's not EA's fault. It's just, it's really the fact that this franchise, you know, it doesn't have a traditional, like, image that can be represented on a cover. There's no iconic figure. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no obvious Mario or anything. But it also does, I mean, regardless of an iconic figure, there's also, like, not, like, guys with guns. You know, there's no Martians. There's not the typical kind of things that you would put on a game cover.
But that is bad in its own way. It was like, there's a time where, like, it seemed like 5 months in a row, it was a guy in armor holding
a gun. Seems like it was.
And not just our magazine, but everyone, you know? Like, it's just, there it is. There's a guy with a different kind of, which game is that guy in armor?
Yeah, remember when we lined those up in a row? It was like early on in GFW when we switched to GFW.
Guy with gun.
There were like three or four in a row.
Yeah,
guy with gun in the same pose, like angled the same way.
Different colors, background.
Right.
Like, this one's the red version.
Yeah. That was great. I was real proud of that.
That's funny. Like, the Sims covers.
Yeah, I'm one creative dude here.
Woo!
It's funny that you call those kind of the Sims games like some of the most difficult ones, because like our Sims 3 cover, and our Sims 2 cover from CGW are probably two of my favorite covers that we've done.
I like those covers too, but they were it was so hard to get to that place.
Well, it's not just like making it look, because the discussion is never if something looks good, if it's composed well, and if we understand it. But it's, again, do the people in New York understand it?
Yes.
There's a random, you know, jury that they compose of whoever it is who are supposed to be cover experts. Do they understand? I don't know what that is. That's not Master Chief. That's not, you know, I mean, seriously, that's not Master Chief. That's not Onyxia.
Right.
Onyxia. We've
never had an Onyxia cover.
I do have to say they did get rid of the, in the old days, like I'm talking about designing cover by committee, which did happen all the way up until our very last issue here. But in the old days, it was even worse. Like the committee was that much bigger because there were these like random people in New York who were just on this email thread. I never saw them. I didn't know who they were really. Who we'd have to, we were
the
like
shadow
forced
council.
The shadow council. Yeah, we were forced to like send them the cover to get their approval from this random group of whatever of yahoos and morons. And they would just like send back their comments would all be this kind of shit you're saying. They'd just be these random, you know, I don't know.
I've never heard of that. What's FPS?
You're just like, oh, fuck.
My son likes Pokemon.
Yeah.
Why is there no Pikachu?
Well, because this is PC gaming magazine. See, we cover games on the PC.
And then you get Michael Jordan. So you
get
it
on the Nintendo stuff this month?
Like, oh, fuck. I fucking quit.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
Jeff's not bitter.
I'm not bitter.
Let's talk about how we can trade editorial for advertising. Oh, never mind. Let's not.
Trade editorial for
advertising. Actually, I shouldn't have said that because it has nothing to do with us. I just like flipping through magazines today. I saw something that was like, to someone who understands a business, it was like plain as day.
Where the ad is next to the article in question.
Not only that, but where the article only exists because the ad was sold.
Yeah.
And it's like blatant. And that's like, we never did anything like that. So, but hey, we're the ones that don't exist anymore. So
that's right.
Power to you.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Right. Don't do what we did. You'll end up with just a podcast only.
Podcast only.
Yeah.
I could do this 5 days a week.
This would be a good job, don't you think? Sit around here and bullshit.
I have all these different dreams. I would love to have a whole nother thing where, I mean, unfortunately, you know, video editing is insanely, you know, labor intensive and time consuming. But like if I should probably keep my ideas close to my chest. But I mean, yeah, I would like to basically do audio and video stuff all the time but come up with some like really good, like a stable of shows. And then, you know, kind of in the way that like the zero punctuation thing has been such a success, but understanding from the beginning, I mean, say if you had like a whole bunch of things like that and you knew from the beginning that you were going to pull the plug on them, at least temporarily, like the day after they sort of hit critical mass, so that instead of like now, because it happens with everything gets played out and it's like, oh yeah, remember that. So you leave it like people are like, oh shit, that was great. This is the same thing that TV does. Lost or something will stop before you can get to the point where you're like fatigued with it. And then you'll watch another show for the rest of the season and then that will end and you leapfrog between them and have a bunch of like different, and I have all these ideas for cool video things and stuff, but it's like, I mean, who knows? I have no one to finance me. So
maybe we should make I have a good idea. Let's make a monthly DVD.
Oh.
I'm just kidding. I was just thinking when you were talking, I was just thinking back in the day when all these different companies thought that they would make like a CD magazine. Remember those days?
Yes. I remember those.
I did.
I remember those.
We had a CD with GameStar.
But it was just a CD.
Well, that's
magazine.
Different. There was
right.
And this was back in the day when, like,
buy the CD,
your computer really wasn't even ready to handle that.
Yeah.
Because I had a couple of those, and they were just awful.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your one-speed CD-ROM.
The sad thing, man. Like, I mean, I apologize to every one of the... I mean, I want to apologize to everyone who subscribed to the magazine in the past couple of months.
Yes.
Thank you, but we're sorry.
Like, we are so sorry.
Right. I mean, obviously, you know, we found out in the last 2 days here there was no bait and switch going on here. If you have subscribed in recent days or maybe you just got your first issue or your second issue, we can't apologize enough. We thank you for that support. And, you know, I believe that you're going to be able to get either a full refund or you can turn it into a
a subscription to
PC Mag,
or EGM or Screw, I think was the third option. So
what?
I'm just kidding.
Ryan, way to go. But it's like it's sad that you can't. I mean, it's nice to be able to lay down on your couch or whatever and read this stuff. I don't know. Part of it's because I work at a job where I stare at a computer. That's another reason why I tend not to do as much reading online as I mean, I really enjoy reading magazines and books and stuff because it feels relaxing, you know. Mm-hmm. To
I get
it feels like work to for me. Yeah. To,
no, I get Entertainment Weekly at home. Comes every Thursday, and I read it cover to cover every week. And I you know, it's not the world's greatest magazine, but it's a fine magazine. There's some really good writers for it. Some good calmness that they have. But I'm bringing it up just because I also frequent EW.com for entertainment news. Mm-hmm. Yet that doesn't stop me from enjoying the pleasures of reading that print mag every Thursday. So.
Yeah.
Yep. We are taking those pleasures away from you for GFW.
Pleasure.
You know what that's from?
What?
I used to have this spray tag. I think it's like appeared elsewhere, but in Team Fortress Classic, it was like Ernie from Ernie and Bert having sex with Pamela Anderson. So it was like, it was a Photoshop, what? Obviously.
Oh, this didn't really happen.
I saw that episode.
And so I'd spray that, and then I remember at one point in this game, there was just this other player, and he's like standing, and he's staring at it, and I'm like, all right, what do you think about it? And then it's just like, he waits and waits, and then all of a sudden it types in that player's name, it just says pleasure. And then he's still staring at it. So I read that in my head as pleasure.
I think we're almost done here. This was an unusual podcast this week. I said it earlier on, but bear with us this week. We're going through the grieving process here. What stage are we in now, you think?
I don't know.
Denial?
No, we're past
well past that.
I had the anger one all weekend.
You still have some of it.
Oh, I do. Yeah. I do still. It was way worse.
You're
this
in
weekend.
The phone holding the dual wielding phones and
you
pens.
Should have seen some of those emails I never sent this weekend. Oh, yeah. Dear Ziff Davis.
Yeah. You did many of those.
Are we in acceptance yet?
I never hit send. Yeah.
Did you save the drafts? I want to see them.
They're probably sitting there. Yeah. They're never getting off my computer, I'll tell you that. Not until I'm at my next job. I do want to thank all of you who did support the magazine over all these years, whether it was GFW or CGW. Mm-hmm. Even if you never paid for it, or you stole it at the supermarket, or you read it at your brother's house or whatever, thank you for reading it too, you know.
And I want to add to that. I want to thank all the contributors, and that this is what I got to do the rest of the day. Start making calls, emails, and, you know, instant messages saying that I'd love for the show to go on. It's basically,
yep.
If you guys want to keep writing, keep working with me, it's going to happen.
Yep. We do plan on good things on 1UP.com for the PC. We're going to hope we can continue on with our creative energy over there. I also want to do a public shout out to Michael Jennings and Rosemary Pinkham, our awesome art team, who worked so hard every month on this magazine under absolutely ridiculous fucking circumstances. So many times, these guys were there on the weekends, you know, at night when we were at home fucking around doing whatever after turning our shit in late. These guys would be there. You know, shit rolls downhill and magazines, the art staff gets it at the end. And these guys would put together this magazine under, at times, egregious circumstances. They never complained. They were always, you know, in good spirits. They were always helpful. And they always, you know, most importantly, had a lot of creativity and drive and passion towards doing a good job. So, you know, just shout out to MJ and Rosie for just being an awesome art team.
Here, here.
Yes. And it's this morning, it was like you come in and we're talking about folders and looking at our pages for the issue and working things out, and they're, you know, working up to the last minute. And it's an extra bummer that while like the text content of the stories that we'd spent the past, you know, 5 weeks working on will go online, like a lot of the art and design work they did is like,
Yeah.
Vanish into the ether.
It will vanish into ether, and you know
some of it can be reworked.
Hopefully,
I think,
we'll be able to repurpose it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we do. I know we are feeling a little survivor guilt because we kept our jobs and they didn't. But it is really a truism, even if we weren't going out of business here, that you know, or the magazine wasn't, I should say, that no, really, we're not. Just because we're bankrupt, we're fine. That when praise would come in for the magazine and the kudos we've gotten online, you know, and about the podcast, it tends to always be about us. So artists tend to be a little bit unsung in the magazine business. But I can tell you, if you like GFW and if you like CGW, you got to give at least 50% of the credit to the people who made it look the way it did, because they worked their butts off. So
you said kudos.
Did I say kudos?
Kudos.
It was a sincere kudos.
Right. Kudos to you, sir.
All right, so okay. I got to link the rope, and I think it's time to go.
Time to go, yeah. Group suicide.
Okay. Is that the phase we're in?
Okay. Yeah, we may or may not be back next week. Either we'll be back or you'll see a news article online, because newspapers are dead, with four game editors hung in their studio.
Oh, and I want to pre-thank Skip for editing this thing, because I need to run immediately to get my dog out of the hospital.
Andrew Pfister.
Right. Along with the art staff, we are dedicating this week's podcast to Sean Malloy's dog.
Well, thanks.
I mean that sincerely. Sean Malloy's dog had surgery, and we want this little pup to recover well.
Mm-hmm. We want your wallet to recover. That's another.
That will take longer than my heart.
Your wallet? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pets
and medical trouble is a...
Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast.
A human being can have, like, a heart transplant for about a tenth of the price of, like, the knee surgery that I got for my freaking dog.
Yeah.
But it wasn't an option, so... Anyway.
All righty.
Enough of that.
We'll be back next week. In our new... What? Oh, Sean Elliott's crying. This is the saddest fucking thing I've ever seen.
The sobbing.
We're sorry.
Okay, well, we should be back next week.
Yeah.
And barring any further Ziff Davis closeouts.
Hopefully Skip
will be less weird than this one.
Find the Price is Right fail song for us.
We definitely need to start the podcast, you think?
Start it and go out on it.
Okay.
Just jam that thing.
All right. We'll be back.